Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Stuart Sackman to the broadcast. Stuart is the Corporate Vice President of Global Product and Technology for ADP, a $12 billion human capital management company. Stuart oversees both client-facing product development and internal technology operations. During Stuart's 25-year tenure at ADP, he's held positions with broad-ranging responsibilities across several ADP business units. He led product and marketing initiatives, developed strategy for ADP's international expansion efforts, and steered e-business solutions. Most recently, Stuart was the Corporate Vice President and General Manager of Multinational Corporations Services. Stuart holds a Bachelor of Arts degree in Computer Science from Brandeis University and an MBA from Columbia Business School. I recently caught up with Stuart at ADP's Innovation Lab in New York City, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, people, as Stuart discussed the strategies ADP uses to recruit technologists and millennials. Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as Stuart described his position as the head of R&D and infrastructure. We also discussed the diverse set of roles Stuart has held during the tenure at ADP, how ADP uses hackathons and an internal venture group to drive innovation, the development of Lifion, and a variety of other topics. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you'd give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you.
Fortinet, the global leader in high-performance cybersecurity solutions, is a proud sponsor of the Forum on World-Class IT. The Fortinet Security Fabric delivers the broad, powerful, and automated protections today's organizations require to secure their evolving networks, from IoT to the cloud. Learn more at fortinet.com.
Stuart, I thought we'd begin with your role. For a bit of context, you are the Corporate Vice President of Global Product and Technology for ADP, a $12 billion organization in the human capital management space. For further context, the organization in its traditional payroll services offering produces 1 in 6 checks for non-government workers in the U.S. So enormous scale that you have. And perhaps we can talk a little bit further about a tremendous amount of data that you're able to collect and leverage in some creative ways as well. But I thought we'd begin with your responsibilities. Can you take a moment and describe global product and technology and your purview?
We are a global organization. Everything we do, all our solutions are delivered in the cloud today. So we really are a kind of a SaaS company. And because of that, everything that we provide to our clients, all the services that we provide to our clients, the solutions we provide, are built on technology, again, delivered through the cloud. And we run the large majority of those in our own data centers today. We're starting to experiment with public cloud, but today we run them all in our own data center. The reason why we have one head for kind of the R&D side and the infrastructure side is to make the handoff more seamless for how we develop products and then deliver them through our private cloud to our clients who use them as SaaS applications. And we're going through an agile transformation in the R&D side, so trying to deliver things more quickly to keep up with the competition and the pace of technology change. And we wanted to minimize sort of the baton pass that could happen in other companies between R&D and infrastructure. So we integrate those two things together because we think it's a more efficient way to bring things to market.
You talked about some of the rationale for the combination of responsibilities. And I wonder if you could peel back the onion a little bit further, Stuart, as to the value in having product and technology together. This is certainly a rising trend, one that we've talked about, in fact, in other forums among other executives who have the combined responsibilities. And I wonder if you could reflect a little bit further about what is gained in thinking about those together.
There's two major things, I think, that are gained. One is it enables agility and speed to market. And that's critically important, again, because we don't have to worry about building stuff and then some process or handoff or over the wall, kind of toss it over the wall to infrastructure. So one thing is agility. But the other is that I think it enables us to make our systems more resilient and reliable because, and I'm sure many of you who are listening, and Peter, I'm sure you're familiar with all the discussion and trends around DevOps, and you know, the R&D side has as much responsibility for the performance and the reliability and availability of our products as the infrastructure side has. And as those disciplines come closer together, having a single leader that looks over both sides of those functional areas, I think, is more efficient.
I want to dive a little bit further into your background. You were a computer scientist as an undergraduate. You worked in startups soon after graduation, got a business degree. You were a consultant for a time as well at Booz Allen Hamilton. You joined ADP about 25 years ago or so, and you've had a very diverse set of roles here. You were part of the team that helped move the organization past its original offering in tax services and payroll services into time and attendance, for instance, as a business. You had product strategy roles. You've been the GM of a couple different businesses within the organization as well. And I wonder, especially in a day and age when people often have the same role in many different companies, the advantages you have found in having many roles in the same company.
Thank you for the good summary of my resume and my background. When the person that had my job before me, the prior person that ran corporate technology, left, I went to our CEO and I said, I think I'm the best person for this job. And he was like, that's interesting. Why? And the reason is that having been in the operations, I had a real detailed knowledge of what our clients wanted from our technology. And I had the opportunity during the course of my career to work across our segments, all around the globe, with clients around how they use our technology. So that deep understanding of our clients and their needs and our markets, coupled with my technology background, because I think that's also important. If you're going to run a technology group, you have to understand how technology works. The combination of those two things is what made me a good candidate for the role, and obviously he ended up selecting me. So that diversity of experience and getting the opportunity to learn more broadly our clients and their needs and how they use our technology, again, coupled with my technology background, was a good combination here to help me drive ADP forward from a product and technology standpoint.
You've alluded to the fact this is a cloud-based company, and in fact has been well before that term was invented. Now it's such a prominent term used in technology circles, but that's been the basis of the business for decades now. You know, as such, it is an organization that has competitors in all sorts of different areas. There are more traditional competitors that operate in somewhat similar ways to your own. There are also the digital native organizations that have emerged competing in slices of what you do as well. And I wonder how you, as a company, have remained innovative and impactful in this space, given the complexity of the competitive environment.
I'm so proud of the innovative history of ADP. And as you said, we in many ways, we created the ASP model before it existed. In fact, we created it before computers even existed. Because if the magic of cloud systems is sort of a versionless one-to-many delivery, where the users don't have to worry about where the work is done, they just can access it from any point. We created that back in the 50s with a team of bookkeepers. And we would go collect spreadsheets and produce payroll for multiple companies, versus the alternatives that were, you know, have your accountant come to your office and do it for you. So we created that and enabled to successfully transition through all these major technological transitions, from punch cards to green screens to batch processing to client server. And now everything we deliver is through the cloud. But the competitive environment, especially over the last 5 years, really is changing. For many years, our competitors were sort of, you know, our business model for less, because they would just replicate our innovations and try to do them at generally at lower costs. But now we're faced with a whole new genre of competitors. They're well capitalized, many of them have great technology, and they've neutralized a lot of our traditional competitive advantages. Because, you know, even 5 years ago, if you didn't want to run things on your own premises and you wanted a versionless software and you wanted one-to-many deployment so you could stay current, choices were on-prem or outsourced, and we're the leaders, the traditional leaders in outsourced. But now we have all these cloud-native companies, and it's really changed the dynamics, and it's caused us to change our investment strategy and our organizational strategy and the way we build products. And over the last 5 years, our CEO has grown investment in our R&D organization, you know, sort of at a double-digit CAGR and literally faster than any other line item in our company. So we recognized that we needed to increase our investment in technology, and we need to build now new capabilities that allow us to compete with these digital native companies. And maybe we can talk a little bit about our lab strategy and some of the things that we've done to help get the talent to help us with these new technologies to compete with this new breed of competitors that are out there. They're liking them to like the piranha. They're all out there after us. So we got to fight them off everywhere.
Well, it's a great segue. We're meeting today, Stuart, in your innovation lab in Chelsea, in Manhattan. We are about 15 miles away from your headquarters in Roseland, New Jersey, and this is an operation that the organization stood up a few years back. And I would love to understand the rationale in developing something that was near but separate, and some of the differences in the way in which you've thought about people, process, and technology in this environment.
Yeah, so you can credit my predecessor for having convinced the board to make the investment in the lab here, because this is a big change for us and was a big investment. We're a big global company, 56,000 employees, but, you know, we're in traditional office kind of parks, typically in the suburbs of cities. Being in the heart of Chelsea in a historic building, we have all four floors now, was a big change for us because just the economics of it. And we picked Chelsea because at the time that we launched the innovation labs, one of the big problems we were trying to solve was modernizing our user experience. We felt like New York City was the sort of the hub, design hub. You know, there's Silicon Alley, it's also the Silicon Valley in California, that's also a hub of technology. We have what we call Silicon Alley, which we think is, given the ad agencies and other capabilities in New York, was a hub for design, and that was one of the first problems we were trying to solve. So we liked New York for that. But we also wanted a place that was close to our headquarters so that we could stay coupled to our core business and have easy access for our executives to the lab and vice versa, but separate enough that we could recruit and build a whole new organization. And going through that process over the last few years has forced us to revisit many of our traditional processes, the way we do background checks. So historically, you know, we would interview and then, you know, we'd give you an offer and then we do your background checks, take 2 weeks, and then, you know, you'd start 2 weeks after that. But to build the dynamics in New York City, to build the staff, you can't have 4 weeks for the type of people we're recruiting because they have lots of opportunities and lots of offers. So we had to rethink the way we do background checks. So now in the city, we give you your offer letter and we make you attest to the fact that you've answered all your questions accurately. And then we get you started and we get you to work the next day. And then we follow the background check. And if we find anything that's wrong, then we go back and straighten it out with you afterwards. Fortunately, we haven't had to do that. Early in the recruiting process, we got some pushback for people questioning our drug test policies. And that caused our CEO and our CHRO to revisit our drug testing policy. And we've since changed our drug testing policies globally for the company because of some of the feedback. It's really forced us to rethink a lot of our onboarding processes, you know, our background screening, the way we manage and organize work. I'm just thrilled with the type of people we'd be able to attract to ADP and the organization that we've built here.
And you've named this organization Lifion. First of all, I'd love to know a little bit about the genesis of the name, but also the reason why you decided to have a separate brand.
You said, I named Lifion. I didn't
Yes.
I didn't actually name Lifion. The team
chose
their own name. You know, the way it came about is the leadership and the lab is a working team, and we're building some of our sort of next generation or some of our critical next generation technologies here. But the team came and they said, hey, we want to create, we want to bring add a name to ourselves so we can start to create our own culture in New York City to help build esprit de corps and help attract and recruit new people. All right, great. Bring me some of the ideas. And they bring me four options, and three of the four, you know, had HR in them. They were sort of descriptive, and one was Lifion. I said, well, you know, you guys should decide, but, you know, I like these three, because what's Lifion? And then they went back, and they said, okay, we heard you, Stuart. We got your feedback, but using Lifion. Okay, well, you get to decide, but why Lifion? And they said, well, you know, when we're out, we do meetups, and, you know, we're out at night, and we meet other technology people. We ask them what we do. We want to tell them Lifion, something that they can remember, And then if you Google Lifion, I encourage listeners to do this, because it's a made-up word, we pop right to the top. So it's very easy to find us. So the Lifion brand was really around creating, again, this esprit de corps and helping us with recruiting. And again, our corporate marketing people weren't particularly happy about it, but we allowed the team here to create their own website. Again, you can search that and look at it, so they could start to highlight the type of people that work here and the technologies that we use. And it's turned out to be really powerful for us in recruiting. Because again, as I think everyone knows, especially when you're recruiting millennials and technology people, they care about who they're going to work with, and they care about what technologies they're going to work on, and they care about the mission of the organization and the social responsibility of the organization overall. And we were able to create, you know, and combine all those things under the Lifion brand. It's worked really well for us. If you talk to people, you'll find they're, you know, highly associated with Lifion as well as to ADP, the corporation. And then because we're 100% agile in our R&D, we actually take that same principle down to the scrum team. So all of our scrum teams name themselves, and they pick their own names, and many of them create their own stickers. And if you look at the tops of their laptops, you'll see the stickers of, you know, their scrum teams. I think it's a powerful way for us to organize and get work done. And I think many people know this from your own experiences. You know, you want to be part of a team who you know everyone, and that's your scrum team. And then you want your scrum team to be part of something bigger, and that's Lifion. And then you want Lifion to be something bigger, and that's part of ADP. But they affiliate at those levels. And again, that's what creates the camaraderie, the commitment to each other that I think enables people to be more productive and be more engaged and satisfied at work, build better products, and help us go faster and win in the marketplace.
It's really interesting. You mentioned the website that was created. And one of the things I found so interesting, having reviewed it myself, is it provides a snapshot of what Lifion is in many of the ways you described. One of the things I found so interesting was, as you noted, what's important for technologists is mission, who they're working with, where they're working, but also what technology they're going to be working in, the extent to which they get the sense that they are working in yesterday's technology. That is a major turnoff, needless to say. But the extent to which they feel like they're going to be working in modern technology, progressive technology, that's a major attractor for ambitious millennials. And one of the things that you make very clear is a list of the technologies they will be using. And they are sort of a pleasant surprise, I think many people would find, relative to a part of an organization that is ultimately part of a Fortune 500 company. Have you found that that has been a major point of resonance with people who've thought about joining Lifion?
Absolutely. And you said it well, Peter. Millennials, especially in the technology field, they care about, again, the technologies they're going to work with, because they want to work on modern technologies, because, to be honest, is that they'll do many different jobs during the course of their life. So they want to build their expertise in areas that help them develop professionally. We don't want any of our people to leave, but, you know, I have to be practical about where it's going. So the technologies are important. The people that they work with, as you said, are important. That's why you'll see we highlight people and their backgrounds and their skill set, because, you know, smart, capable people want to work with other smart, capable people. Diversity of our workforce, we try to highlight. And then people want to work in an environment that's comfortable or in sort of a cool space, super open environment. And I think that's helped. Again, we have to compete with the other big tech firms. And there's lots of the big names are in New York and in our neighborhood. And some of the companies have, maybe their brand is a little bit more, maybe a little bit more attractive from a technology standpoint. So we have to compete with them. So we need a space that's good. Again, people that are good, technology that's good. And both a mission that's good for the team as well as a mission that's good for ADP overall. So our corporate mission is a more human resource, and we really believe that we're helping companies by providing better systems to them. We're helping them manage and engage their teams better, so we're making the work environment better for people. So we have a good mission for ourselves. And also important, I think, is the, you know, commitment to social responsibility. And again, at ADP, we have a big commitment around social responsibility. We have our foundation that helps in educational areas, and almost all of our associates, 56,000 associates around the world, we give time so that they can spend time doing things that are helpful in their communities, their individual communities.
That's great. Another practice that you've adopted that would be quite familiar to those who work for digital native organizations is the notion of hackathons. I wonder if you could talk a bit about the way in which you've adopted those practices and some of the value you've derived from them.
We run them regularly, and we tend to run them in areas where we have a high rate of change and a high focus on innovation. So over the last few years, we've introduced a product called Data Cloud, and we've been driving and making good progress on analytics and predictive analytics and benchmarking that leverages our big data, which obviously we've anonymized across our large client base. But as we try to think through what are the next set of things that we can bring to market and how can we generate more value out of Data Cloud, we run a hackathon. So we can get people, again, around the world. We have technology teams, probably 20 or 30 countries globally. So we can get these teams around the world in a very fixed amount of time. They assemble a team for the hackathon and to think about and have some fun developing something creative around data analytics on our Data Cloud platform. And then we do the hackathon and we roll up the results and we review them. I often get to sit on the judging panels. And then we pick and recognize the winners so that people can have some fun and get recognized. And we generate real ideas that help us improve the products. So we run them in our Data Cloud product. We have something called ADP Marketplace, which is our open system strategy. We have a marketplace where we publish all of our APIs, and companies can build systems that leverage our APIs and integrate with their own products that either, you know, that supplement what we do or sometimes replace aspects of what we do. So in the marketplace, we run a hackathon to figure out how people can connect. What we're building in Lifion and the building we're in here, which we spoke about, is we're building kind of an open HCM platform. So we run a hackathon for our teams around the world to see what kind of applications they can build. And again, the goal is both to have some fun and to generate ideas that we can commercialize. So we tend to succeed in both of those areas. Definitely the having fun part. We're making some progress on the commercializing side too.
To that point, I want to just continue with it for a moment more. How do you think about, in the grand scheme of 56,000 people that you have, Lifion represents a small portion of those just in terms of raw numbers. And likewise, the hackathons and the work done here, well, in some cases, it may be suggesting innovations that are extensions of businesses that are already here, products that are already in place. But especially in those cases where it is establishing something fundamentally new, going from prototype, for lack of better terminology, to something at scale. How have you thought about that? That's a challenge a lot of organizations face. So taking what works on a small scale and making it something that's globally applicable.
Yeah. So we have a couple of different models. We have a couple of different approaches for doing that. You know, the Lifion team is relatively small. My organization, Global Products and Technologies, probably closer to 9,000 people, you know, 6,000 or so in the R&D side and a few thousand, the remainder in the I&O side. So we run these hackathons. I try to get the teams around the world engaged so they get exposed to the new technology that we're building. So yes, small team in Lifion, but eventually everywhere around the world, we're going to use the Lifion technology. We want to federate development using the Lifion technology. So the hackathons give them an introduction to that. So, and that's how we can engage more people around the world. But we also have a formal structure around what we call ADP Ventures, which is an internal organization where we take, you know, ideas that would be maybe a little bit further from home, not specific enhancements. And we have a small ventures team, and they either work with the GPT teams or we use outside people. And we're trying to build and commercialize prototypes in a much more rapid fashion. Then we can test the market acceptance. And if it works, we commercialize. There's a big trend in the U.S., sort of the gig economy people are familiar with. Number of W-2s produced in the country are actually declining. Number of 1099s are increasing. We largely serve W-2 workers today, so we have a venture around building solutions for 1099. We build more than a prototype. We build a workable system, but then we go to market in a small way to test the viability of it. We've done the same thing around talent management and high growth space. I'm sure many of you are listening. Recognize that there's a drive across really the global economy to activate and engage people to improve productivity. So our ventures team developed a set of solutions called ADP Compass, and we're actually rolling those out now. So that's one that's graduated from kind of ventures into rollout. So hackathons tend to help us with enhancements and extensions to things we do, and ventures is the strategy we use to test, you know, markets that might be one step further from home.
That's excellent. Well, Stuart Sackman, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks, Peter. It was a pleasure being here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Please join us next week when my guest will be Jeff Paschalides, the head of business development at the venture capital firm Sequoia.
Fortinet, the global leader in high-performance cybersecurity solutions, is a proud sponsor of the Forum on World Class IT. The Fortinet Security Fabric delivers the broad, powerful, and automated protections today's organizations require to secure their evolving networks, from IoT to the cloud. Learn more at fortinet.com. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.